San Diego's talk radio leader, 760 KFMB presents It's Your Money and Your Life. For the next hour, Richard Muzio and Joe Vecchio will educate and inform you on matters related to your financial future, your life, and your leisure. Now, with It's Your Money and Your Life, here are Richard and Joe.
All right. Good evening, everybody. My name is Joe Vecchio, your co-host, announcer, and producer, coming to you live from KFMB with 50,000 watts of power on this Super Bowl Saturday. We're going to dispense with the normal elongated intro and get right over to introduce my co-host, who's a CPA extraordinaire, an accomplished marathon runner, best-selling author, philanthropist, and a family office expert advising several high-net-worth families. Richard, how are you tonight?
I'm great, but let's not waste any time talking about us.
Yes, of course, we've been talking about Dick Enberg and his play McGuire, and we had a conversation with him earlier, and it went something like this. All right, we're talking to the great Dick Enberg, and it's all about the play McGuire, which he wrote. So I just would like to know, Dick, what inspired you to write this play, and when did you first encounter Al McGuire?
Well, I'll go back to the first time I met Al McGuire. I didn't like him. He was rude and abrasive, and he would hide in the corner, and you couldn't find him, and you're trying to prepare to do a telecast with Marquette University, and McGuire wouldn't be at practice, and then he wouldn't come out on game day until the players had been introduced. By that time, you're on the air, and you never get a chance to even meet the guy. So I wasn't real fond of Al McGuire initially, but that's okay. Sometimes a person that you think is unattractive can change their colors, and he had a lot of peacock in him, I'll tell you that.
Unbelievable.
But then as time would go on, after 3 or 4 years, I finally, in the 1977 NCAA championships, his Marquette team made it to the semifinals, and I was going to do the game against North Carolina Charlotte, and I was able to capture him at practice on Friday, and said, "Hey, coach, I mean, all these years, you've never even said hello to me. Can you please give me 10 minutes? And there was a little patch of grass outside the Omni in Atlanta where the finals were held that year. Uh-huh. He said, "Come on." And we went out the door. Al loved to lie on his back and look up and get a little sunshine. And he had a priest with him. And he started to talk. And an hour later, I said, "I wish I had all of this on tape. This guy is just magnetic. I mean, he's the most incredible character that I've ever met, no one in second place."
Really?
And, of course, that then led to our relationship after he won the championship. It was a miracle win for him. He beat Carolina in the finals. Mm-hmm. He joined us the following year, us being Billy Packer and Dick Enberg and Al McGuire formed a three-man team. And when Packer went to CBS 4 or 5 years later, he stayed at NBC and worked with me. And every day, every time I was with him, he would teach me something about life. He was a New York street genius. And so when he died, and gosh, I'm just thinking this is Super Bowl week. He died during Super Bowl week 2002, so it's been 13 years now.
Huh.
And the family asked me to write the notes for the memorial program in Milwaukee, and that's a daunting task, and I tried and I tried and I kept throwing my efforts away, and finally I said, "No, I'll let him write it himself. All the little McGuireisms, the little pieces, the nuggets of information as he saw life from a different angle than the rest of us, I put those down," and that seemed to work. And afterwards I said, "You know, there was so much he gave me. I'm going to just, so that if I write a book someday, which I did, I can put it in my book." And the more I did that, the more I realized I might have a play here. So that's a long explanation of what's about to happen at the North Coast Rep on February 9th and 10th.
Yeah. Now, he grew up in the streets of Brooklyn, you say? Did he have any formal education himself? Or
Actually grew up in Rockaway, and just as you get onto Long Island. Mm-hmm. His dad and mother owned an Irish bar. He used to always say that, "You guys think that you're smart when you get your diploma." He called it the piece of paper. He said, "But if you really want the preparation for life, go 10 bar for 6 months and then go drive a cab for 6 months, and now you've got your master's and doctorate in life."
Oh, my gosh.
But, yeah. Dick, most people don't know he went to St. John's, followed his brother, who wound up being a Basketball Hall of Famer.
That's right, and both Al and Dick are in the Hall of Fame, but But Al always used to laugh at that because Dick was the real player. In fact, there's a line in the play where he refers to his brother Dick. He was so smooth he could play basketball in a tuxedo. In fact, he was the first one, Dick McGuire, to dribble between his legs, pass around his back. Bob Cousy would work out in the same summer right near their bar on Rockaway Beach. There was a basketball court, and they'd play a lot of three-on-three, and many of the great players in the New York area would come there and test their skills against the best in New York.
So all these lines in the play and all the content, did you actually like make notes throughout the time you knew Al, or did it just come pouring out after he passed away? Or,
well, I didn't take notes during the time, but the kinds of things that he would teach me, I just didn't see. I grew up on a farm. I trust everyone. People in the Midwest are, your neighbors are your pals and friends. And Al in the streets of New York was more wary. You had to prove yourself to him.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, he used to say Dixie. He called me Dick, D-I-C-K-S-I-E, Dixie. Hey, that's what he called his brother too, Dixie. You're going to have somebody with their hand on your wallet. You got to be more careful. They're not all nice out there. And I said, Al, you're going to have your hand.
Well, I told you the story. My brother, when he was in college, waited on him at breakfast. I guess that had to be, I don't know, in the 90s or 80s. But anyway, my brother was a server in the University of Chicago, Illinois campus restaurant there. In comes Al McGuire. He sees this championship ring and strikes up a little conversation. Anyway, he tipped him $10 on a very small breakfast menu item, and you were...
Whoa, wait a minute. Repeat that. He tipped $10 on a breakfast menu?
Yeah.
No way. No. He had the shortest arms and the longest pockets in the league.
Well, my brother must have impressed him, or he must have been surprised that he was such a fan.
Al must have wanted something. Yeah. Did your brother collect toy soldiers?
No, it's not as far as I know. But,
so, Dick, there's a funny story about Al McGuire when he was a backup for the New York Knicks, and he was pressuring the coach to put him in because nobody could stop Cousy. So the coach finally put him in to try to stop Cousy, and he fouled him 6 times in a row.
I put that in the play. He made a Al said, and I'm speaking in the first person as if I'm the actor Cotter Smith, who has really captured the total essence of who Al McGuire was. He's brilliant. That Al says, I made a dumb mistake one time. I'm trying to use a little of the New York accent. Uh-huh. He says, I told the writers that I can hold Cousy to 10 points. Yeah, and that was big headlines. I'm going to bet him. I'll put a dish on the court, and he'll be eaten out of that dish. I'm going to hold him. I'm going to hold Cousy to 10 points. And he said, and I did. He had exactly 10 points when I fouled out in 4 minutes.
That's right.
Now, Cotter Smith, how did you find this guy, this actor, to play the part?
Well, Cotter, I know. He and his wife, much like the North Coast rep here in Solana Beach, they had a small theater in Milwaukee. Mm. He was, at the time I met him, he was doing some Hollywood work. But the head of the drama department at Marquette University knew of the kinds of work they were doing at their theater. And she, knowing that it's a long story. I'd sent the script to the Marquette president. He liked it. He sent it to her, said, wow, we should do it. Then I talked to her, and she said, well, Cotter Smith, he looks like Al. He's tall, lean, dark hair. Why don't you meet him? So he and his wife, Heidi, who's the director, flew out to La Jolla, and we had them for dinner, and they stayed overnight. And after about a half hour, I said, he's it. I mean, he's the perfect guy. So it's just fate treating. Well, that's the way Al McGuire's life was. Everyone seemed to gather and follow, and things fell into place. And it's the thrill for me is that Al McGuire, a guy that I didn't like at first, that I learned to love, really comes to life once again.
Mm-hmm. The story, the 1977 championship team, I mean, it's a miraculous story. He went to Chicago and recruited some ragtag players, right, and made champions out of them. Does that come out in the play too, or?
Well, yes, I do a whole segment on his recruiting technique. It's a little long to explain right now. But he would pick out a star. He would go recruit him hard, whether it was in Chicago or New York. A lot of kids came from New York.
Uh-huh.
And he always treated the stars differently. He said, you got to be a hypocrite as a coach. You know, the stars are the ones who win you game. Treat them differently. What's this all about treating the whole team the same way? You know, there are different rules for the stars. They help you to win. Those other guys get you fired.
but Dick, most people thought the team the season before, 75-76, was a better team. They ended up losing in the third round of the tournament to Indiana, who, of course, went through the season undefeated. So I think it was a real surprise when they bounced back to win it all.
And the 74 team lost to North Carolina State, and that was the game where Al got a couple of technicals in the first half and admits that he blew the game, and that's in the play as well.
Yeah, and then their 71 team only lost one game in the tournament to Ohio State by 1 point. They were number one in the nation for a good part of the 70-71 season.
And that's the beauty of, well, I guess sports, that he did have much, much better teams. But that 77 team, he had already announced in December that it was his last year. So he was a lame duck coach. And there were only 32 teams into the tournament that year. And Marquette was the 32nd team. And I'm convinced, no evidence, but I'm convinced that the NCAA committee threw him a bone. He said he's leaving anyway. McGuire, let's let him in. What harm can be done? And he goes on and all the way to the finals and wins the championship.
Kind of like a wild card, right?
what a great story.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah.
I want to, because I know you've got a lot of ladies who listen to your show, and one of the results so far that has been so pleasing to me is that after the show we do a talk back, and we'll do that as well on the two nights that it's going to be performed here. And we bring out other McGuire stories, other stories that I couldn't fit into the play. And then afterwards, you know, the audience, some of them will stay in and just want to chat more about it. And often it's the women who say, wow, I didn't even know who Al McGuire was. My husband dragged me here. I thought it could have been some other McGuire. And, you know, I thought it was Mark McGuire.
Yeah.
And she said, I would really like to know more about him. So he was that kind of character. He had, I found out after he died that he had ADD. He used to say, I read and write at a seventh grade level, and we used to laugh. That, come on, coach, you're a genius. What are you talking about? But it was true. He really did have education at a seventh grade level. He had to steal and copy and cheat and do all the things when you have that kind of severe disorder to get through the barbed wire of life. And that's what made him such a special character.
Huh. And you don't have to love basketball to love this play, right, Dick?
No. It's basketball-based, obviously, but it's really about the wit and the wisdom of Al McGuire as this incredible character, and his insights into everything from how do you recruit kids, how do you treat people, how do you maneuver life to your advantage, how do you treat someone who's dying, on and on and on. I mean, he just saw life at a different angle, and there's some wonderful lessons in life within this play, and it's not long. It's about an hour and 10 minutes, and then we do the talk back right after the show.
Have any of his players seen the show?
Oh yes, we've done it in Milwaukee and at Marquette a couple of times, and several of his players have come, and they are convinced too. He said that Cotter Smith, he was coach. Huh. He became coach,
he's
and that's
channeling.
Not an easy thing to do for an actor to get an audience to turn, because many of them are sitting there, okay, he can't be Al McGuire. Let's just see him. About 10 minutes in, you can just feel that he's got him, you know?
Outstanding. Hey, Richard had some...
Just two quick questions.
About the Padres, right?
Well, two quick questions. One, we've got Art Barter, the founder of Servant Leadership Institute, following you on this show, so he wanted to make sure he said hi. You were kind enough last year at their national conference to appear with Bill Walton as the keynote panel. So anyway, a big hi from Servant Leadership Institute and Art Barter.
Right, yeah. That was a great group.
Great group. And then last thing, real quickly, I love the changes the Padres are making, but let me ask you a question, since I'm sure you've been following it too. Who the heck is going to be the Padres' leadoff hitter this season?
That is a common question. They really don't have one right now. The Norris catcher that they got from the Oakland A's has a terrific on-base percentage, and he's also more of a power hitter, and he could lead off. That would be quite rare, wouldn't it, to have your catcher as the leadoff man?
Yeah.
Amarista just strikes out too much. He would be the logical.
Well, but he's 28% on base, so that's
I coached a long time ago, but it would only be a suggestion. Bud Black knows 100 times more about this beautiful game than I do. But if Amarista hits a home run in batting practice, you know, I would bench him that night. Because the little guy, you know, the little ninja, he hits a home run, then he thinks he's got to try to hit a home run every time he's up there. If he would just shorten his stroke, try to hit the ball to left field, use his legs, beat out hits, get some walks, he would be the ideal leadoff man. But his evidence so far has been that he strikes out much too many times.
Mm-hmm. Well, maybe you could get home in spring training there, Dick, when you get out there.
It's going to be a great season, isn't it?
Yes.
Isn't that an interesting question that we're worried about the leadoff man? I mean, we've been worried about who's going to hit third, fourth, fifth, and sixth.
No, now last year it was one through eight, you know.
I've already got a nickname. They're all right-handed hitters, all with power in the Western Metal Supply Building.
Yeah.
I'm going to say stay tuned. They may be down by two going to the ninth, but the Brick Busters are coming up.
Heard we're putting a large new TV screen at Petco. I just saw that in the news. Where they're going to have the third largest, their best in the whole league. So
that's right.
That's cool.
More than double the size of the old one. So it's going to be totally modernized. I mean, everything is, with this ownership, is moving forward and positive, and there's a great buzz in the city, and there's reason to be excited. We kept our pitching staff. The bullpen was the best in baseball. We've kept our top three starters. I think we've even built a better bullpen, and they're not through trading yet. And it's a tough division. You got to beat the Giants, the World Series champs, and the Dodgers. But I think we're going to be solid contenders. We're going to be in the conversation all year.
Good, 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 good. Well, Dick, thanks so much. We're looking forward to February 9 and 10, two wins right there to start the season. And we'll be looking forward to seeing you, okay?
All right. Thank you, man.
Thank you. See you then. Bye-bye. All right, we've got to take a short break. We'll come right back after this. Hang on. All right, we're back after that great little discussion with Dick Emberg. What'd you think of that, Richard?
That was really neat stuff. I can't wait.
Folks,
I'll be there both nights.
NorthCoastRep.org if you want to get some tickets. I think there are a few left.
There's some left.
February 9 and 10. And the actor, Connor Smith, I looked him up during that break there. And my gosh, this guy's been doing TV and film for quite a while. So he's quite accomplished. You know, he's not one of these Johnny-come-latelys, that's for sure. So I'm looking forward to that. And I want to give a little shout-out to Mary Lou in Escondido, who was kind enough. She was so enamored with the show last week with Lane Elliott and you, Richard, that she called in to the control room, and I just happened to stick around a little bit and took her call and had a very pleasant conversation with her. So I hope she's listening tonight and enjoying what we do. And I think she's going to get in touch with regard to some financial questions. So we shall see. But anyway, in studio, as you had mentioned, Richard, the founder and CEO and past guest on this show, is the great Art Barter. So, Art, how are you tonight?
Hey, guys. Doing great. Doing great. Thank you for letting me follow Dick Emberg.
Isn't that terrific?
Yeah, we told everybody you were in the on-deck circle.
That was great. Thank you for letting me do that. I appreciate that.
ServantLeadershipInstitute.com. Check it out.
Right. Well, Art's been on before, and I know that he has a huge event coming up in April, isn't it, Richard?
Early March.
Early March.
9th and 10th. See, the 9th and 10th of every month is really, really important.
Wow, it all flows, doesn't it?
It all does.
This year in Coronado, right?
In Coronado at the Marriott.
I know you were at Paradise Point last year. Because there's more people coming this year, or just want to change a venue, or what's going on?
No, we like the bridge, and part of our talk is going to be in leadership. You have to change what you do in little steps, and the analogy of the bridge, that gets built in sections.
Ah.
And we liked being out there with the view of the bridge and looking over at the city and. So we're going to use the bridge a little bit in some of the teachings we have out there at the conference.
Plus Debbie Marriott Harrison is speaking, so she may have done a little arm twisting about where everybody was staying. Right?
We are really honored to have her here. She's the culture officer for Marriott and just has a great servant's heart, and she just can't wait to get going. We're really looking forward to having her.
And that's going to be at the Coronado Marriott, right?
That's
why you mentioned that, right, Richard?
Yep.
So Coronado Marriott, lovely.
So hopefully they got a good group rate.
They did, because my wife is going to the event, and she got a room just because she didn't want to commute all the way to North County. They got a great group rate. So. Yeah.
Outstanding.
Yeah.
That's great.
So our brief background on Servant Leadership Institute. I know you've been on the show before, so a lot of our listeners know who you are and what a great organization Servant Leadership Institute is. But for those who haven't heard, a brief background, if you will.
Oh, sure. Yeah, we started the Institute 6-7 years ago. We've been having conferences now annually for 5 years. This is our fifth anniversary. And what we do is we try and help leaders learn a different way of leading. And we put the emphasis on serving first. And we believe that leaders are to serve those that they are responsible for and influence, and not the other way around. And it's interesting because it deals with human behavior, and it takes a different mindset for leaders to do that. And it really turns things around. We've got some great examples. Cheryl Bestlider from Popeyes is going to be there. She's been at this thing for 6-7 years and just gotten some amazing results from that approach. And So we're really excited about it.
I think you had mentioned that you turn the pyramid upside down, the hierarchy pyramid upside down. Is that
we
right?
do? If you take an org chart where the CEO is at top, just take it and turn it upside down, and the CEO is really at the bottom, and everybody that's above him on that chart are the people that he serves and he's responsible for. And
he or she, right?
Or she, yeah, exactly, absolutely, yep. So it's you just turn everything upside down, and you've got to think about serving first and helping people succeed in life. And what they do, they spend a lot of their time at work, and our job is to help them be work within their gifts and be successful.
You've got a great slogan for the event. It's ready, mind set, go.
Yeah, exactly.
I love that.
Yeah, it is a mindset, and it's a different mindset, and we're going to try and help folks grasp onto that, and it means a lot because we've learned at Datron World through the process we went through, we had to really change how we think. And it really is different. And so we're going to kind of pass that information on, pass what we know on. And that's really what the Servant Leadership Institute is all about. We just want to share what we know.
Great. Art, hold that thought. We're going to come back with Art Barter and get into everything going on at this conference, a special 2-day deal coming up. Stay tuned right after news, sports, and weather. We'll be right back. All right, we're back in the second half of the award-winning It's Your Money and Your Life. All these podcasts will be at iymoney.com. And now over to Richard to thank our sponsors.
Big thank you to UBS, Mr. Michael Caronta and Drew Freitas. Mike is actually in studio with us tonight, just hanging out, having fun during the breaks. So, Mike, hopefully you can make it out to Servant Leadership Institute. I know you're coming to Dick Enberg's play because I got you a ticket. Jason Kruger and Signature Analytics, one of our favorite CPAs. Jason's got the best CFO company here in town, and now he's not only here in town, he's also just opened a new office in Denver, Colorado. So we'll have to go up there during the winter, Joe, and do a show from there so we can ski.
That's a good idea.
That's it. Our other favorite CPAs, Polito Epic CPAs, brand new office over in San Marcos after many, many, many years in Vista, getting ready for tax season, Don Epic and Paul Polito. Brenda Geiger with the Geiger Law Offices, Asset Protection and Estate Planning. Joel Gruskin with Cost Segregation Initiatives, helping real estate owners improve their cash flow. Carl Sheeler with Berkeley Research Group, best business valuation firm on the planet, helping business owners understand the risks that drive the values of their businesses and how to reduce risk and increase value. Last week's guest did a great job, Lane Elliott, Senior VP with California Republic Bank, a bank that specializes in working with wealthy families and family offices. Hub International Insurance Services, formerly Mars Maddox, Neil Staley, going to be coming up soon to talk to us about the Health Care Act. And these folks are great with employee benefits and insurance. Stop Financial Elder Abuse Alliance with Paul Hines at Hearthstone Wealth Management. A fairly recent guest, great organization that, as you can guess from the name, helps to prevent financial elder abuse. And last but not least, certainly, and the star of the show, or one of the two stars of the show, ServantLeadershipInstitute.com. Again, the big event coming up on March 9th and 10th, Coronado Marriott. We're for the first time in history appearing on the same stage at the same time will be John Maxwell, Stephen M. R. Covey, and Ken Blanchard. So that's really, really exciting stuff. So thank you to all of our sponsors. And Joe, how can our listeners find out more?
All they have to do is get on their computer, get over to iymoney.com or smartphone or whatever device you're using. Anyway, we across the top of the page, you have there's a sponsors tab and a drop-down menu, and you can click on any one or all of them, and you can get all their information, phone numbers, contact information, emails, biographical information. And they've all been working with Richard for many, many years with great success. Correct, Richard?
In some cases, more than 25 years. So, Art, speaking of 25 years, you've been in business a long time, and I know you came up through the ranks sort of with the old-fashioned command and control business model.
I did,
and now you're doing something 180 degrees different. What happened, or how'd that happen?
Well, you know, I was trained in the corporate world for a long, long time, and I was trained to generate quarterly results and use the power model, and in 2004 was part of a public corporation that entered into an investigation with the Department of Justice for potential violations of Foreign Corrupt Practices Act. And what transpired during that year and how our employees were treated, how we were treated by everybody involved in that just really got us thinking about what we wanted to do. And then Ken Blanchard came in and planted the seed in my mind and challenged me on my leadership style and my faith, and said, you know what, if you're really a good leader, you need to serve people. And so those two events is what got me on this path of servant leadership. And when we bought the company in late 2004, we decided we wanted to run it with servant leadership style of management. We didn't know what we were doing at the time. We started on that journey, and we've had things that worked, things that didn't work, but overall, it's been a wonderful journey. And mm-hmm. You know, helping people and treating people differently, it's a lot of fun. And we're fortunate enough to help a lot of people in the community as well.
Now, Ken Blanchard's a local. He lives in San Diego County, doesn't he?
He does, yep. His office is over in Escondido. He mm-hmm. came to my church one time and talked about leadership style. And that's the first time I met him, and we've been good friends ever since. He's been a great mentor for me.
Excellent. Yep.
And so how did folks at Datron handle the change? Some faster, some slower? Was it really, really difficult for a lot of people to change?
Everybody changed at a different rate. And what we had to learn was people are going to react differently to it. And we had to become experts at the leadership level to help deal with that. And some people, it was an easy transformation for them. And others, it was very, very difficult because of their training and experiences they brought to the table. And, you know, we just have to bring them all together. And what we did is we tried, and if we saw improvement and we saw a desire to move forward, those are the folks we invested in. If we had someone who didn't want to go forward and just believed in the power model, that's where our job as a servant leader was to go help them find another employer that would help them succeed in what they believed in. And in some cases, I like what Ken says, you just share them with the competition.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, I know you've got the huge conference coming up, fifth annual, but that's not the only event you do during the course of a year. I know people can actually attend workshops at your institute's location in Carlsbad, correct?
We do. We do all kinds of workshops. We have some little pamphlet books we distribute out, mainly. We're what we do is we consider ourselves experts in implementing this type of servant leadership style. We do teach, but we're not the academic focus. We're more on the implementation focus, and that's what we've learned at Datron is the implementation side of things. And so that's where we focus, and we try and help people take that concept who want to move it in their companies and help them implement it. So we do speaking around the country, workshops. Next year, we're hoping to have our first conference on the East Coast. We've got a couple of partners out there that want us to come out there. And we're just having a great time helping people. And that's what we love. We love to talk to people who want to do things differently.
And March 9th is very significant for another reason, because you have a new book coming out on that date, right?
We do. Our first book coming out, Farmer Able, will be released at the conference. We love stories, and so we took a story about a farmer and how he runs his farm and his interface with his family and interface with animals and folks that work for him. He struggles at first and then finds different ways to do things, and in the end, he succeeds. And so he has experiences with both the folks that work for him, the animals on the farm, but more importantly, the impact of servant leadership on the family is part of that story as well. And what we hope to do is everybody is in a different path in their stories. Everybody has stories, and we like to take this and let them enjoy the story and see how it applies to their life. And Devin, who is the superintendent of schools at Vista School District, he read the book, wrote a great endorsement. We saw him at a lunch the other day, and he said, "Art, this is a great book. I can read it in an afternoon, but we've been talking about it ever since we read it." And that's what we want to accomplish.
They've got some great testimonials. My question is why is Bill Walton's testimonials always the longest one anytime?
Well,
because he's a passionate guy, Richard.
Okay,
come on.
Okay.
And he's 7 feet, so
well,
who's going to tell
him? Last year at your servant leadership event, he was on a panel with Dick Enberg as the keynote panel. But anytime Bill Walton is on a panel, it's not necessarily a panel. It's like the Bill Walton Show.
it was great. Bill
it was really good stuff.
Bill's
though.
Been a great supporter.
Just Dick couldn't get a word in edgewise.
He couldn't. And you know, I didn't make the conference last year. I was in the hospital.
I know, you weren't feeling
well. And I had a phone call with Bill and Dick before they went on. I don't remember that phone call to this day.
Okay.
I was pretty sick.
It was a great panel.
But
really
Bill
was.
Has helped me. He called me up on my birthday, sang to me, loves what we do. He's got a great servant's heart, and he's just been a wonderful, wonderful man for us. And thank Bill for everything you've done for us.
Yeah, and he's going to be at the play on the 10th, Tuesday the 10th. So if you want to come out on the 10th,
bring
say it,
hi. Oh, bring great. Bring great, about yeah. his wife and about eight guests. Too,
go hang so. Around him. You're going to yeah. be a different person. Yeah,
just don't buy a seat behind his seat because it's hard to see. Over
exactly.
Your
no, yep,
come
exactly.
on. He's in the, he brings his own chair, Richard. He sits
that's
in the
right.
aisle. You
okay.
know that.
Okay. It's a good joke, Joe. You always spoil it. So did it take you longer to write the book than you thought? I'm just curious.
It did. Yeah, this project has been going on for about 2.5 years. And with it not being an academic book, it's really a story.
Sure.
That story evolves over time. And we really, really took time to make sure it was the voice of Datron and the players at Datron and my experience and making sure that we passed on what we knew.
So tell me if this is true. I tell people, if you want to learn humility, write a book and then work with your editor, and you will learn humility.
Amen. Yep. You got to get used to a red pen, don't you?
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly. Yep.
Mm-hmm. So it's like, well, I thought I was pretty smart, but I guess I'm not.
No. It was a great experience, and we've got some more projects on the table right now, but we're going to enjoy this one because it took a while to get this one out.
Sure.
Yep.
So, Art, do you divide your time between SLI and Datron now, or how does that work?
I do. I'm the CEO for all the companies that we own. I've got folks that run each group, so I do stay involved. I'm active on all the boards, and I am the CEO of all the groups, so I do stay involved in the business, and I love doing that. I love being around people. Mm-hmm. I love helping them look at things different. And you know, getting through the challenges in life, and as Dick said, what do you say, the barbed wire of life?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I love it. I just love it. Yeah, that's what we help. We help.
How
people
about
get
we
through
get
the
through
wire.
The barbed wire of a commercial break right now, Eric? Why don't we take a little break? We'll come right back with more of It's Your Money and Your Life right after this. All right, we're back in the home stretch with some classical gas. And back over to Richard and Art. Art Barter, CEO of Servant Leadership Institute and Datron, of course. So welcome back.
Everybody, pull out your calendars and write this down, because after a guest to be named later next week on 2-7, on February 14th, we have Cheryl Batchelder, who is the CEO of Popeye's Louisiana Kitchen, a $1 billion plus franchise, along with Scott Schimmel, who's the co-founder of U-School, an amazing vocational approach to training young adults. And then on February 21, we have Dr. Ken Blanchard, along with Debbie Marriott Harrison. Yes, Marriott is the Marriott hotel chain. Debbie's in charge of corporate culture at Marriott. So we've got Dr. Ken Blanchard with Debbie Marriott Harrison. And then it even gets better, or continues getting, staying great. February 28th, Stephen M. R. Covey, along with two wonderful ladies from WD-40, Gary Ridge's company, Roxanne Johnson and Joanne Lamb. And so Feb 14, Feb 21, Feb 28, we've got, I guess you'd call it, a Servant Leadership Institute series going on right here on It's Your Money and Your Life. And so, Art, let me ask this question. Obviously, the big keynote panel this year at the event at the Coronado Marriott is going to be two of the three aforementioned, Stephen M. R. Covey and Ken Blanchard, along with John Maxwell, all appearing on the same stage at the same time. How on earth did you ever pull that off?
Well, you know, each one of them have had an impact on me personally as a leader and on what we do at Datron. They've all been involved with us. We wanted to bring them on stage and just share how what the experience was when I first met them, how they impressed me with Ken was, I just want to teach. John Maxwell asked me, he'd never met me before. He gave me a big hug, whispered my ear, and said, Art, when I come out and talk to your management team, I want to serve you. And I went, John Maxwell wants to serve me? And he just made an impression. And Stephen Covey, he's just a wonderful man, talking about trust. And we wanted to bring them all on stage at one time and just share the experiences around Datron and Servant Leadership Institute. And so we're going to invite them into my kitchen. We're going to have a kitchen up on stage. We're going to have a cup of coffee, and we're going to share and talk about the past. And then, you know what? It really is, I would spend every dime for those three guys again. They have such an impact on organizations, and they've served me very, very well, served my company very, very well. And getting them on stage at one time is a special, special event. We didn't know they hadn't been on stage before until we started asking, and they said, "No, we've never done it before." I said, "Okay, we're gonna make history. with our 5th anniversary.
Are you going to make a video of this, Art? Because you should recapture this moment.
We've got a video. Yeah, okay. We're going to get that done, and we're going to video the event. So we're very excited about it.
I think folks need to know. We haven't really discussed. I mean, Ken Blanchard, 30 books, a one-minute manager.
No, not 30 books, Joe. That was my book.
Oh, yeah.
No, over, I did better.
He's got 30
million books.
30 best-selling books.
But about 30 million books.
No, 13 million copies in 37 languages. Okay. But all these guys, if you totaled up the books they've written, it must come out to millions of copies out there, right? I mean, Stephen Covey, 7 Habits of Highly Effective
That's
People.
Well, that's senior. Stephen M. R. is the son.
Oh, okay.
Stephen R. Covey.
But he must have some books as well, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Oh, yeah. He wrote the book. He wrote an amazing book, Stephen M. R. Covey, called The Speed of Trust.
Speed of Trust.
It's not only about trust, but it's about how if trust isn't happening or it's happening slowly, how that actually impacts businesses in a negative way because opportunity costs, time is valuable.
What we found out at Datron, guys, was when we had a low trust index, and we measure trust index twice a year, we actually created a tax on the organization and its profits. When trust was higher, you actually generate a dividend on the organization, and the organization actually moves quicker. And if you think of a pit stop in NASCAR, once the guys jump over the wall, everybody knows what their job is. They're all working together. They trust each other. And things get done in, 6 or 7 seconds? That's what the speed of trust is all about. And it really makes a difference in organizations. It's made a difference in ours.
Does it help when you have an ESOP and when employees have a financial stake in the outcome?
It can. Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. ESOPs are more prevalent in the Midwest. Mm-hmm. They've been at it for a long time. I've got a friend back there who said, I've got a guy in a machine shop who... His stock is worth $600,000. He's not going anywhere. He wants the company to succeed. Mm-hmm. And yeah, there's actually a big benefit for that. Mm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Excellent.
So, Art, the format of the 2-day conference, you've got the keynote panel, obviously, with Stephen M. R. Covey, Ken Blanchard, John Maxwell, and then you have some keynote speakers, like Stephen M. R. Covey's going to be, I believe, Cheryl Batchelder's identified.
Cheryl's coming out. She's going to co-host with me on both days, and then she's going to speak a little bit on the second day.
Okay. And then you also have, I guess you'd call them breakout sessions, where some of the folks I mentioned, like Scott Schimmel or Debbie Marriott Harrison, are actually leading, I guess you would say, more intimate groups because there's 3 or 4 choices at a time.
Right. Smaller groups. Debbie's coming in to talk about culture. Scott's coming in to talk about how you understand emerging leaders and how you take these 4 generations that are in the workplace today, and how do I, as an older leader in the workplace, how do I pass on my knowledge and my experience to those that are emerging leaders? And it's a tricky thing. And then I'm leading a workshop in servant leadership and in challenging times. And so we're looking to have a great time. I think we have a lot to offer to just about anybody who would like to come and attend.
Can you mention some of the companies and universities and so on that allow us to mention who are actually going to be in attendance?
There's some. We'd rather not do that right now. We'll do it later on. But we've got Popeyes are going to be there. Mm-hmm. We've got Chick-fil-A.
WD-40
is going to be there. We've got several organizations from the East Coast are going to be there. Several universities here on the West Coast are going to be there with representatives. And what we're excited about is right now, I think about 60% of those who have signed up are brand new to the conference. Mm-hmm. Mm. And so
listen to this radio show.
They all do. Yeah, exactly. Thank you, guys. I really appreciate it.
How many are you expecting total, Art?
We're looking for about 350.
Oh, my gosh.
We'll fill it up. And if we get to the point where we fill it up and we have a waiting list, we're going to create a satellite location and pump the satellite into it. So we'll see what the response is here in the next couple of weeks.
Yep. And how much time dedicated to all these workshops? Are they an hour and a half?
About an hour and a half.
Okay.
Right. And a little bit of Q&A in them.
And, of course, the one with the big three superstars, that's going to – how long is that supposed to go?
That's an hour on stage.
Okay.
Yep, all three at one time.
That's on Monday, February 9th. Am I correct?
That's the first day of night.
That's the first day.
We're going to end the day with having all three guys up on stage.
Yeah, yep. That's right.
Yep.
So you mentioned servant leadership in challenging times. I would imagine it's fairly, I don't want to say easy, but it's easier to do servant leadership when the company's growing and everybody's making money, and then maybe the economy happens, you lose a major contract or customer, and then things get a little bit tight. How is that form of leadership different when things aren't as rosy?
You actually have to think of things differently. When the business goes down and you have to face like a reduction in force, in a traditional power model, you're going to notify someone that they're going to lose their job, and and you're gonna cut them off from the computer. You're gonna make sure you escort them to the door. And
I've seen people lock
the office before they even get in. Lock the office. In a servant-led organization, we will notify people, but we let them stay the entire day. We let them go back to their workstation. We let them interface with people. You treat people with dignity and respect through that process, and you'll be amazed. And one of the stories about 3 years ago, I had to lay off some folks from our PCB line, about 12 people, and I sat and announced it to them, talked to them. And I was pretty upset at the time because it was a line that we had to discontinue. And I said, hey, I need to go. I went into another room. 4 of the employees followed me into the room, gave me a hug, and told me, Art, things are going to be okay. And that's the difference of the power model and service model. When people know you care, they care about you too in tough times. Mm-hmm. And it's amazing what people will do when they know you care about them. So you do things differently in tough times. And you serve first. It isn't all about just the bottom line. And you take care of people. And when we have to let people go, we'll keep their insurance longer. We'll help them get a job. We'll invest in them. And so we always err on the employee side and not on the employer side in tough times. And we never want to stand and walk away from our values. And that's the real challenge for companies, because when times are tough, some people will do anything to get business. Mm-hmm. And that's when your values have to stand up and you say, you know what, we're not going to compromise our values. And that's the real tough part in tough times.
Well, we're really excited here to be able to run 3 shows in a row later this month with all those amazing presenters who are going to be at the event. Again, it's March 9th and 10th at the Coronado Marriott Hotel. And more information is at servantleadershipinstitute.com. Not sold out yet, but it's getting closer.
Or they can go to our website, iymoney.com. Mm-hmm. We have all that stuff there, too.
So, Art, any closing thoughts about servant leadership?
You know, I was fortunate enough a couple of years ago to meet Condoleezza Rice when she was in town, and we listened to her.
In 10 seconds.
And she basically said, you know what? The U.S. helps people, and when there are times of need around the world, she says, if they don't go in and help, if the U.S. doesn't, who's going to do it? Right. There's nobody going to do it.
Right.
That's how we feel about servant leadership.
Sure. Excellent.
Helping people is really what it's all
great.
About.
Art, really appreciate it.
Yeah. Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much. Richard, you have a great week. Have a great Super Bowl tomorrow, everybody. Thanks to Eric Rubalcava, our sound engineer, for making us sound great. Thanks to Craig Blanke, our account executive. Thanks to Dave Sniff, our programming genius here at KFMB. All these podcasts are at iymoney.com. If you get over there on Monday, you can listen up there, commercial free. So have a great Sunday, everybody. We'll see you next week. Bye-bye now.